My name is Bill Meeks, and as part of my editing process, I'm recording this draft of my novel Dog Boy, Den of Thieves, as an audiobook. Or at least I did. Dog Boy, aka Bronson Black, is Culta City's 13-year-old superhero. When his parents die in a car accident, he's left in the custody of his mysterious Uncle Randolph. Using his magic kit and a strange precognitive power, he protects the city from Andrus and his guild of thieves. Along the way, he befriends Cindy McNeil, a wannabe reporter with a secret of her own, and Mr. Horam, his boss at the old curiosity shop. When the guild captures Dog Boy, he must decide whether to join them or take them down once and for all as he embraces his destiny as one of the good guys. Dog Boy, Den of Thieves by Bill Meeks. Hi, everybody. This is Bill Meeks, author of Dog Boy, Den of Thieves, and a new one, which we'll get here to in just a minute. It's been a while since I've put out one of the podcasts, so I just wanted to touch base. A couple weeks ago, for example, I came out with a new Dog Boy book, a whole new adventure called Dog Boy Danger on Liberty Pier. Here, let me read the description for you. Sometimes the murder isn't the mystery. Dog Boy, aka Bronson Black, is Culta City's 13-year-old superhero. After defeating the Guild of Thieves, things have settled down for the mangy mass crime fighter. Until he sees local businessman Dexter Stonehouse gunned down on Liberty Pier. When it appears an old family friend might be involved, Dog Boy jumps into action to unmask a killer. Does he have the guts to expose a man from his past? Or will he ignore the evidence to learn more about his strange powers? Meanwhile, girl reporter Cindy McNeil has a secret, and along with three other teens, she's hatching a plan to fight City Hall. But can Cindy lead a revolution without Bronson finding out? Again, the book is called Dog Boy, Danger on Liberty Pier. It's available now on Amazon, Kobo, Nook, all of your major platforms. You can find links to all of that at dogboyadventures.com or go straight to Amazon and pick it up at bit.ly/libertypier. Speaking of Amazon, this week, March 11th through March, 15th, Dog Boy Den of Thieves, the first book in the series, the one that I did the half of an audiobook for on this very podcast, is available for free on Amazon. Now, if I've already sent you a free copy or you've already listened to the first half of the audiobook on here, could you go ahead and go and download it again for free just to help me, chart and get the book a little bit more of exposure to a new audience? And I'd really appreciate it if you could. Today, the main topic of discussion will be Dog Boy Den of Thieves, obviously, and my buddy Adam Pawlowski did a good interview with me about the book for his YouTube channel, and I've excerpted the audio and put it in the podcast here. But speaking of audio, I'm also releasing an audiobook version of Dog Boy Danger on Liberty Pier on Audible in the next few weeks, hopefully. I hear their approval process is a little weird, so it might be a little bit longer than a few weeks, but hopefully not much. So keep an eye out for that, and if you can, go pick up Dog Boy Den of Thieves. Like I said, it's bit.ly/dogboybook. Actually, I don't think I said it, but I've said it just now. Or you could just search Dog Boy on Amazon. Well, now we'll go ahead and get into the interview with Adam, and I'll probably be checking back in a few weeks to fill you guys in a little bit on the next Dog Boy adventure, The Curly World Follies, which I'm currently working on. Thanks.
Hello, and welcome to, I don't even know what I'm calling this. We're going to keep it simple for right now. Interview, episode one. I'm going to use and abuse my social media contacts to occasionally sit down, talk with someone when I can, creators who do stuff I like. I figured, let's kick this pig, so to speak, with someone I've known for a number of years, someone I actually met online, Bill Meeks. Hello.
Hi,
Bill
Adam,
Meeks. How you doing, man?
Excellent.
So Bill and I have known each other for a number of years. I think the first time I remember interacting with you is for that the NSFW show video, the Zombie President.
Zombie President, yeah.
Yeah, you and I you helped me out a little bit with some technical stuff and behind the scenes, and that's where you and I first sort of interacted. And Bill has gone on to do things like you do a lot of media work. He does all the fancy bumpers for the Collection DX show. He does his own podcast, but he's also an author. You're an author, right?
Yes. Yes. As of November, when I put out the first one, I guess.
Yeah.
Once you release one, you're official. I've been writing for years. A lot of it is, scripts for commercials and things like that. And then more recently, training videos,
mm-hmm.
a corporate presentation, stuff like that. But it was about time, I think, because, I've been kind of secretly wanting to get stuff out there for years now. And I don't know. I had the right amount of time, I think, to finally take it seriously.
So, Bill and I interact primarily over Twitter. We're friends on Facebook, things like that. Obviously, we've worked together a little bit with the Collection DX show.
There was that one weekend in Tahiti that we're not going to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to talk about that.
I was promised we wouldn't talk
about that. We wouldn't talk about that. But I remember last year during the NaNoWriMo, is that the
NaNoWriMo.
NaNoWriMo, yeah. Which
National
is
Novel Writing Month.
Yeah, so it basically challenges folks to commit to doing X amount of words a day, just writing a story every day for the month, and then you receive a certificate for completing the challenge, so to speak. And I recall you talking about this a little bit. I didn't realize at the time it was Dog Boy. I'm not even sure you told people it was going to be called Dog Boy. But I remember you calling out looking for a name for a character, and it was somebody we both know online, and I'm reading the book. And I went, hey, it's Erica.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Erica. And so it was kind of odd to be reading this highly engrossing story and recognizing somebody like your son I spotted in there and other names. Like, it was very interesting to see how you pulled. So I suppose we should show folks. Bill took that that piece of fiction, and I take it you polished it up, probably gave it a rewrite?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like over the course of, it was about 11 months from the time I finished it to the time like I released it.
Gotcha.
But there was a bunch of other big stuff going on. Like we moved and there was a new job and this, that, and the other. So, it really all told, it took me about 3 or 4 months to, polish it up and everything. I didn't want to put out the first result because, sitting here at midnight, like trying to finish your last 500 words or something, you're going to mix up words and misspell things.
Exactly. And I think originally, didn't you, you killed this particular character we were talking about. Now, spoiler, she doesn't die in the book. You clearly have rewritten it. But I think originally at the time you were talking about this character out loud on Twitter, you killed them. And I guess somewhere through the rewrite, error, you made it so this character Erica doesn't get killed. She lives and actually recurs in a couple more scenes. So,
It definitely brought her back, especially in the big chase or escape from the underground, which is one of my favorite chapters.
So, explain to folks for those who haven't picked up this little gem, and we'll get to that and how I finally got a chance to sit down and read it and how surprised I was by it. Tell folks what it's about.
Okay, basically, Dog Boy is a 13-year-old, he's a 13-year-old superhero. He's Culta City's superhero. And basically what happens is at the beginning of Den of Thieves, his parents pass away, and the will specifies that he should go to the closest living relative. So he moves to out of his suburban town to the big city, Culta City, with his Uncle Randolph, who's a real jerk, and basically wants him to pull his weight in, the keeping of the house.
Very, absolutely the worst kind of step parent. Very Cinderella, very much the archetype of the evil distant relative that you've been stuck with, and very dislikable right out of the gate. And you do a good job of that without. Here's what really blew me away right out of the gate, and I'll let you kind of finish up your pair, is how well written it is. It is not a thick plotting book. It is really well written. It's very well paced, very high adventure. And then you get to the end and you realize that not only was there some great parables for younger folks, you are indeed weaving a much deeper mystery that you don't quite realize at the beginning is going on. So He is forced to live with his uncle. I didn't mean to interrupt, Bill. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's fine. And this is something I forgot to mention, so I'm glad you interrupted because it reminded me to remember. Basically, he gets a low-level set of superpowers from his dad, as well as a key to a trunk, which holds a lot of magic tricks and a Halloween mask and cape that Bronson decides to use as Dog Boy to fight crime in Cultist City.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, as he goes through it, he makes some friends along the way. He gets a job at the old curiosity shop run by Mr. Horam. He starts going to a school, and then he gets pulled in by a group of kind of a cult that lives underneath the city in the subway tunnels called the Guild of Thieves. And that's the basic.
Here to steer the world away from this dark path. We are the Guild of Thieves, and we exist to take back this world from the rich and the powerful. But one stands against us, Dog Boy. We know who you are. We know where you live, where you work, who your friends are. You are needed. Join us, or suffer the consequences. Join us and fight them. We are the New Order. We are the Revolution. We are all the Guild of Thieves. Seek us. Seek us.
Very nice. It just seemed like a perfect time to throw that in.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, that's a fun little video I did to promote the book. That's the leader of the Guild of Thieves, Andrus. He's also the guy carrying the lantern on the cover.
Yes.
Of the book. But he's the leader of the Guild of Thieves. And, you know, after Dog Boy takes out a few of his best guys, he kind of gets upset about it. Has them retrieve him. And, I don't want to get too spoilerific or anything, but...
So it is both an origin story about Dog Boy. How old is he again? Refresh my memory, 13?
Yeah, he's 13.
13 years old. You're right, because there's a bit of a budding romance there with an older girl in school. and he's on that cusp of, am I supposed to like girls or not? And it's very cute and
is kissing icky or is it awesome?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so it is both an origin story for Dog Boy, and it is also the adventure of the Den of Thieves and his encounter with that. And so they're both kind of wrapped up in themselves. Let's talk real high level for a little bit about it. You know, that way if folks are tuning in for this, you know, we don't want to really spoil too much.
That's actually one of the hardest things talking about this book because, you know, I've been living with it like forever now.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's like I know the world as someone might know, you know, an event that happened in the news last week in the national news. Oh, yeah.
Created it. So these things are living in your head. These characters are alive in your head. And yeah, you're carrying a bigger picture, clearly. Yeah.
And then I get halfway through a sentence, and I'm like, wait a second. Some people would probably think that was a spoiler, you know.
So
another problem is I don't really care about spoilers too much personally.
This is true, but some people, you know, I mean, you just shouldn't spoil your own book. You should, you know, that's for sure. That's for sure. So a couple things I want to talk about real off the top. He's left an orphan very early in the book. Obviously, if we look at the art here, the presentation reminds me of Hardy Boy books, Encyclopedia Brown.
Mm-hmm.
These are what they remind me of. Those are sort of those books that, you know, the serialized, there's a new book every week kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones I read. Who are your influences to do this? Because I thought I was going to be reading a kid's book, literally. And it's much more clever than that, that on the surface it reads like a young adult's novel. But it really is, there's a lot going on for big kids, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was something I made a very conscious choice about, because actually the first couple drafts of it, there was some cursing. I think there might have even been like a sex joke or something like that.
Yeah.
But I decided to kind of pull back on that a little bit because, one, I between the second and third draft, I really realized, you know, this is a classic boys' adventure.
Yeah.
One of the last big rewrite was kind of bringing it closer to that aim, and you know, obviously the style of the cover and everything, as you picked up, was definitely based on Hardy Boys. But what was I saying?
What were the influence? Like, were there other, like, those are two obvious ones. Were there mm-hmm. other young adult authors that you really, really dug that I'm not naming that we should be aware of?
Actually, I'd say probably is as far as like from a literary perspective, my other big influence was Charles Dickens and specifically Oliver Twist.
There is definitely an Oliver Twist vibe to this a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of like that dark, dingy alleys and sewers and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, obviously Bronson's an orphan who's being treated poorly by all the adults in his life, which is very Oliver Twist. I basically, the story, I incepted it as a combination between between Oliver Twist and Stan Lee's Spider-Man.
Gotcha.
You know, the first 100 issues or so he had on the title, where it was really all about the practicalities of a superhero moving through New York City. Like, I always really like the scenes where he was having a hard time finding a place to hide his costume or get back from his run as Spider-Man, and his clothes would be gone, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I tried to fit the best aspects of that with kind of the Dicksonian kind of vibe.
Gotcha. So what I was going to point out for those who, you know, maybe I'll pick this up for the little ones. So I'm expecting a very young adult novel, and then his parents pass away, and it is highly graphic. Graphic. Really surprised me for a moment there. And it is literally the only thing that keeps me from wanting to present this book earlier on for my nephews, as opposed to waiting till maybe they are hitting double digits and teens, you know what I mean? But I presume that's the audience you were aiming for. You're not looking for 9-year-olds to read this per se, right?
Not per se. I don't think there's anything so graphic that you couldn't give it to someone who was, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, and as long as they were a smart kid.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I do want to make this clear that at the time it seemed graphic. As you come to understand things, especially with Bronson, right?
Mm-hmm. Bronson.
Bronson Black. Thank you. Such an alliterative name, too. It really, like, very superhero name. Yeah.
Very Stan Lee, yeah.
But once you come to understand the nature of what his power is, it makes perfect sense. You did in great detail, moment by moment, what was happening with the mother and the father in the front seat. But you don't understand that at the beginning of the story. So it's a very shocking moment, but believe it or not, it does indeed play very much into what his ability is all about and all of that. So,
and I will say with that scene, it actually was more graphic to begin with. I pulled back a little bit on that. I'll just say that they're in the aftermath of their death and everything, this dog shows up, and the dog originally wasn't outside of the car. It was inside the car, and I'll just leave it at that. You can probably let your imagination.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, that got revised throughout it. That was probably pushing it a little too far.
Maybe a little bit. But from there, it is a much more, I mean, for all the down in poor Bronson's life that's going on, it is a very upbeat, fun read. Shortly after having to move in with his uncle, I think this is the other important element to talk about before we start getting spoilery for folks, is the magic shop. The magic and sleight of hand is very important in his development as a hero as well. Where did you pull that from?
Well, actually, my dad was a magician, as is Bronson's dad.
Yes.
And he actually left me it wasn't a trunk like Bronson gets left, but it was a little leather suitcase filled with a lot of his old tricks. And I kind of took that idea and ran with it. I don't think it was trying to be analogous to my real life situation or anything. Yeah. But I just thought it was a really, because you don't see too many superheroes that have a magic motif unless they're like a full-on magician, like Santana, or something like that, or a Mandrake,
And they're doing full on sorcery Harry Potter magic. We're talking about sleight of hand, illusion magic, you know, and that's what's really kind of interesting about it.
Yeah, and you know, so part of it was that from a story perspective, Bronson's dad was a magician and left him all these tricks, and he just assumes that, you know, these tricks are meant to, I'm supposed to be using these to fight crime, right? Because he left me a mask and a cape, and I, you know, so I should be in power, so I should be a superhero, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, he's 13 years old, and who among us when we were 13 years old could have come up with a really effective, like, hard street-level superhero and have it be, like, a very consistent concept? So, you know, you have the dog motif running because the mask was in there, but you also have the magician motif running. And then he's carrying knives around using like explosive things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's all kind of kludged together like a 13-year-old would do with stuff they found.
Pretty much. Once he's in the new town here, I'm showing you did another trailer here for the old curiosity shop, which is where he ends up working.
Yeah,
in the book, and a great character in there, in Mr. Horam.
Mr. Horam, yeah.
So, all I'll say from here is, if you follow my YouTube channel, you saw I did an Adam Recommends that just went up before this, you know, where I glowingly recommended Dog Boy. I mean that from the heart, even though I know Bill, it really, really, really took me by surprise. Killed an afternoon on the train, going down to visit a friend, and I flew through it. I didn't expect to fly through it. So, moving forward, Bill and I are going to get spoilery a bit here. So, you may want to stop here if you're interested and intrigued. Come back later on. Otherwise, you've been warned. So,
are they gone?
They're gone. We can get
Dog Boy in the next book.
Exactly. So yeah, Cult of City. Here's what I thought was very, very interesting about the book, and it really kind of came out of nowhere. It really was like last two chapters, like just as the events around the Central Park are starting to go off, you suddenly introduce a handful of kids that apparently pass through almost in the background early in the book in school.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they show up and they're up to some shenanigans of some sort. And then it turns out, like, there's a whole shit ton of superheroes in the fucking city. Something's been going on with the kids in Cult of City.
Yeah.
And clearly, Bronson, his uncle, his father, like, they're all tied into this. How, we don't know. But I was like, no shit. Can I point out something that I don't think you ever spell out in the book, but I picked up on, and I'm wondering if it's intentional?
Okay.
So, Bronson's ability is to see just a few moments into the future. It's how he knows when he should act on something. Mm-hmm. As he gets pulled into the Den of Thieves, and they force him to use his ability for crime, his body starts having a very physical ill reaction. Nosebleeds, he's having problems, you know, things like that. When he's using his powers for ill, it makes him physically sick. In the end, when he steps up to being a hero, he unlocks, like, even more potential and does some pretty radical shit that's above and beyond anything we see in the book. Was that metaphor intentional in there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, it you know, that his breaking down, like, getting nosebleeds and passing out and all this stuff was kind of meant to, you know, point towards the degradation of, I don't want to feel like I'm getting too artsy-fartsy.
But, no, but
you know,
that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah. As he embraces life with the Den of Thieves, his body rejects him, more or less.
Now, and his uncle puts himself into a catatonic state, trying to abuse his power to hurt him at the end.
Yeah.
And he's basically dragged off in a coma, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Taken off by the police.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like a drooling idiot, you know, basically. So it was like, interesting.
There is, I don't I'm trying to think of how to say this without getting too spoilery, but there is something very important to that, which because it happens. I will say in the new book, Danger on Liberty Pier.
So I do want to say this. I literally just finished Bill's book, I think, last weekend.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of Ocean at the End of the Lane, and as soon as I finish that, the new Dog Boy book is. So I'll be hopefully reading that this weekend, and I'll get back to you on that. We may be back to talk again. You never know. But
I'll just say that, you know, the whole thing with the powers, it does come up in this more. It's not, you know, thematically and metaphorically as tied in to the character as it is in Den of Thieves, but there is something really big going on there. And I have the rest of the novellas, because I'm going to write 5 more before I do the next full novel. And so I have them all in my head. I'm trying to decide what order to do them with, but I'm pretty sure the next one is really going to start to get into why the source of his powers might be cutting them a little.
Gotcha. So. Okay, I gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, I was just very surprised. So I'm curious. So obviously you were a little inspired by, you know, your real life events with your father. Clearly, I don't think there's a little boy anywhere who grew up to be an adult with any sort of imagination that didn't dream of being whisked away to Narnia or finding out they were special and had magic ability or something. You have really, in my opinion, tapped into a very primal adolescent boy archetype, I guess, myth. Like, obviously, I'm guessing that you definitely had, was, you know, Dog Boy almost a character you wanted to be when you were a kid?
There was an incident that might have started this whole
an incident, you say?
Basically, when I lived, I grew up in Katy, Texas. I lived in, for the last, like, year we lived there, we lived in this trailer park, right? Mm-hmm. Katy Country Estates, which makes it sound so fancy. But there wasn't even enough money for a double wide place, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
But you know, it, obviously, the mix of kids you would imagine in a trailer park in rural Texas were the neighborhood kids, and they would play at this basketball court down on Willowwood. And I would go down there, and they would never let me play. And I knew they went down there at night because on occasion I'd like sneak out of my room and like go ride my bike around the neighborhood. So I decided to mess with them by going down there at night when they couldn't see me approaching. And then, but keep in mind, you know, I was a huge kid too, like very unathletic, you know, very portly.
As was I, you know.
But I took a piece of fabric from my mom's sewing collection. And I fashioned kind of like, it was more of like a Zorro mask, but, you know, that just tied around and then had the eye holes. Gotcha. And then another piece of fabric for the cape.
Yep.
And I snuck out at like 3 o'clock in the morning and went down to this basketball court to get the drop on them.
Oh, of course.
And I didn't. It was awful. They basically laughed me off the court and I rode my bike home in shame with, you know, my cape flapping behind me.
I think I did something similar. Around in the kindergarten, first grade, somewhere. And it was almost like in the, it was almost like in the book. They recognized me by my voice immediately, you know?
That's the thing with the superhero concept in general. Yeah, a mask is pretty good if you're 20 feet away and it's dark. But if you got face to face to someone you knew, they'd know pretty much immediately.
I've never in a million years bought Lois Lane doesn't know Clark Kent is Superman. Like, how do they not know they're one and the same? You know, same thing with the Batman Bruce. And let's face it, any of the great writers have always sort of towed that line with, well, clearly Commissioner Gordon knows Bruce Wayne is Batman, you know?
Yeah.
They've definitely played with that more than enough.
That's something about Bronson too. That actually, you know, as I'm writing more about him and stuff, I'm discovering even more and more is that his secret identity is not a secret at all.
Yeah, like, no.
If you get close enough to him to learn his last name, you probably know he's Dog Boy too.
Probably. Obviously, something's going on with the mayor. I presume that ties into what's going on with the kids, and at least that's what we're meant to think, whether or not it. What else was in there that I definitely wanted to pick your brain about? I do like the message, especially in the 21st century. You know, a lot of people, more than not, are coming from broken homes. Mm-hmm. And it's an important life lesson to understand that sometimes your family will be people that you surround yourself with versus the people that you're born to. And yeah. That's a really important thing. That's a really important thing to learn early on. And it is a central theme, really, of this book.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure that probably definitely comes a lot from my own life, because I've, you know, with my immediate family and stuff, I've had a falling out several years ago.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
So you know, I'm sure that definitely feeded into me being able to hit on that as strongly as I did. But, you know, it's also, you know, just so important, too, because, you know, for kids like that, they think they're on their own. And at that age, you really can't really talk to anybody about it, especially if you don't have family around. Or you know, it's good to at least get that good example out there that over the course of time, even if, you know, you have a terrible home life, if your parents are mean or cruel, that you can, you know, as you walk through life, you can grab, you know, one person here, one person there who can make up that new family. Because I mean, family is important. And even if the ones that you got stuck with are not living up to what they should, there are still great people out there you can surround yourself with to protect you, to help you, and to help you save the day when you fly.
And that's an important thing, too, is learning early on when someone is shoveling bullshit your way versus genuine wisdom.
Yeah.
And that is very much a contrast between Mr. Horam and the head of, you know, and his uncle, who, spoiler, is the head of the Den of, you know, Thieves. So, very, very important messages there, but not heavy-handed. I don't want to make, I look for stuff like that. See, here's the thing I really, you know, I hear friends talk about, you know, for example, everyone raved about, we'll take it to a TV show for a moment, just to, Breaking Bad. Phenomenal drama. And at the end of the day, it was really about watching a good man fall down, and really well done. Cautionary tale, perhaps. Masterfully executed. I don't want to take anything away from that. But at the end of the day, it's not about a whole lot that you should care to revisit on a regular basis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
You know what I mean? You're not going to bust out Breaking Bad and watch all four seasons, or five. It was four or five. I don't even remember.
It was five.
Five seasons. You're going to bust out and watch all five seasons of Breaking Bad every couple of years because it gives you a warm fuzzy or makes you think about things. I'm always looking for something that's about something more.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of fiction out there, it seems, these days that I don't, you know, that really at its heart really very clearly sets out to have a couple of really good messages in there in an entertaining package. And you do it you did it really, really well here. I mean, you should be very, very proud. It's an interesting character, it's an interesting universe. And I can't wait to see more of what you're going to do with this. I presume we're probably going to be introduced to, obviously, in a more regular basis, other heroes.
In fact, that group of kids you see in the last, throughout the book.
Yeah, but you know, they don't really come, you don't know what you're looking at.
How to navigate the rooftops.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, exactly.
But, you'll see them pop. I'm sorry, what was the question again? I got distracted.
You know, about are other heroes going to to the fore, you know?
Yeah, they show up in the last chapter here, and the thing is, these six novellas that I'm doing, starting with Danger on Liberty Pier, they're all going to be set between the next to last chapter and the last chapter.
I noticed that in the beginning. It kind of takes place right in between there. Yeah.
So you're going to get to see how those kids went from the kids who got shooed away by Cindy in Dixon Park to the kids who are showing up on a hovercraft to kidnap the mayor at the end of the book. And so, you know, that's basically throughout all these novellas, that's going to be the B plot.
All right, because when I realized that you were doing sort of like, it looked like side stories before you were going to return to sort of the main plot. No, the mystery you started teasing with is going to be here over these. So you're not going to make us wait 5 or 6 books before we have to continue the mystery.
Oh, no, like I mean, wait, one of the things I'm definitely trying to do with every novella is, one, to hit those kids. That sounds really bad. I'm going to hit those kids every time I write a new book. No, but, you know, hit their story, see what they're up to, see how they're progressing, and address one of the threads I left kind of dangling in Den of Thieves as far as the backstory.
Gotcha.
And obviously that's going to... Right now it's still kind of in the background, although the main... new character in Danger on Liberty Pier is Bronson's dad's former magic partner, okay. The guy he toured with and everything. So, I mean, there's constantly kind of hooking back into the past, yeah. But it's going to just kind of step forward until we reveal that whole origin.
What you're describing, the way it's like, have you ever seen the television show Babylon 5?
I have not seen Babylon.
All right. One of the
I have read, that's J. Michael Straczynski, right?
Yes.
I read his book on screenwriting a number of years ago. That's probably about as close as okay. I got, but I think he had some examples from the show.
One of the things he did really, really well was he would do things like early on he would tease. He never, you know, he would never show you the smoking gun mm-hmm. without that being relevant later on.
Yeah.
He would never just throw something at you and then not return to it. So a constant theme in that show was early on the station was going to be destroyed and a great war was coming, and they were and there's another character in the show that from the very first episode sees his death.
Mm-hmm.
What you discover as a viewer of the show is, yeah, we hit those moments, but when we get to those moments, the beauty in that reveal is all the other layers of color and texture that go around that to give perspective. So when you're initially introduced to this idea, oh no, B5's going to blow up. And then, oh, you know, when you look at the whole scope of the show, you go, ah, yeah, 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 okay. You know, spoiler, that you will see the station destroyed at the end of the series. But is it this doom and gloom thing, or is it the station was decommissioned and that was the end of the station? That, you know, there wasn't some horrible end. It was, no, 20 years later, boom, station goes bye-bye. He does that very well in the show constantly, changing and widening your perspective. And it's very clear what you're setting out to do with this book. So when you talk about, I'm going to throw a sliver in here in this book, I'm going to throw a sliver in here, it sounds very much like you're kind of taking that approach of, I'm going to show you something,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to show you a little more, and then we're going to come back later on, I'm going to show you a little more, and then we get to the whole end of this thing, and you're going to have the whole picture, you're never going to realize what you were looking at the whole time.
Yeah.
Am I giving you too much credit, or is that where we're going?
No, that's pretty close, and I mean, J. Michael Straczynski, he's also written a lot of comic books
and film. Yeah,
and that kind of plot mechanism is very comic book too.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have your A, B, and C plot. Your C plot's resolved
absolutely,
in that story.
Yeah.
Your B plot goes out for an arc, and your A plot goes out through the series.
Exactly, very much.
And, you know, that's basically the kind of structure I'm working in. And, you know, I'm definitely, I'm laying in everything I need as I'm writing to get to the last story in this universe, you know, because I know what that is.
Gotcha. So there is an end here. In other words, this isn't like a character you created that you're like, I'm now, it's not like, you know, Robert E. Howard and Conan, where you're just going to pump out Dog Boy stories from now until the day you die. Or is there, like, a whole story you're mapping out, and then when you tell it, you're done?
There is an entire story. I know where Bronson Black is going to end up in the fate of Cultist City and all the characters.
Oh, nice. All right.
You know, that it's all up here, but at the same time, I'm also intentionally... I'm using one of them now, but in the... Because there's going to be I don't know if people really care that much, but there's going to be three big books. Den of Thieves, the next one, and then the one after that.
Gotcha.
Right?
So three major pillar books, so to speak. And then in between, you're going to have these novellas.
Yeah, exactly. And basically, I'm going to use the novellas to fill in certain periods of time. I'm leaving time between every big book and also at a couple of points within the big book. Like there's, I forget, I think it's like between chapters like 6 and 7 in Den of Thieves. Mm. There's a period, I like to think it's about 3 weeks in my head.
Yeah.
Where Dogboy or Bronson's just living his life. He's working at the shop. He's living in the
hole. It kind of just talks about, hey, no, you know, shit doesn't hit the fan on him for a couple weeks. Things are cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an area I could go back and explore again once I get done with the main story. And I'm going to have a couple of those areas in each spot to go back and write these novellas. Although the ones I'm writing right now are going to be focused entirely in that space between the next to last chapter and the last chapter.
Excellent. Now, again, you know, I consider J. Michael Straczynski a great storyteller, and so there are a lot of parallels here. I did not sit down for this interview tonight to expect, but he did the same thing. He mapped out a whole timeline, and then there are poles in the timeline where if he wanted to go back and explore, he can, and he has. He's tried to over the years. They've done spin-off stuff and side stories and things like that. So even though the whole story in Babylon 5 is told, you know, when the opportunities come up or Warner Brothers said, hey, you got any more B5? You know, you make us a lot of money. We'd like to do more B5. And, you know, he'd go, well, hey, you know, I could probably do this. We could do that. And, you know, it's the same thing. You know, he left holes in the timeline that he could go back and revisit should he want to. So I think that's a sign of a great storyteller. I'll be honest, you know, let's bring it to this. You know, obviously, I think very highly of Babylon 5. I consider it to be the best science fiction show ever told on TV. And I think it is still hands down because they invented it, really. The 5-year story arc. You know, they did it. You know, Breaking Bad.
Which is like standard now.
Breaking Bad wouldn't have happened. Lost wouldn't have happened without it. And I know a lot of people really like Battlestar Galactica. But when I watched that show, I could tell they were making it up as they went and they did not know where they were going.
Yeah.
And there were times where I thought it was really great drama, and there were times where it really felt like it was all over the goddamn map. And I know I'm in the minority on this, but ironically, the only thing that saved the show for me was the finale. And I know a lot of people who were the opposite, where they loved the show the whole way through and then hated the finale because it got all sort of metaphysical at the end on it, you know? But it felt it. It felt it from the get-go, early on. It started strong. I didn't like the miniseries. Thought the TV show started really, really strong. Had a lot of really great philosophical premise. I think this is what it was. It really tried to tackle some really great ideas, but the writers of that show were not really either into the ideas, understood the ideas, or were well-read enough to execute those ideas. Whereas someone like JMS, I don't know what life he lived, but he came from a place where those same things played out in a much better way in his storytelling. I'm rambling like this because it's what genuinely floored me when I got to the end of this book. Like, I you know, you're not the first person I know who has self-published a book. And I have other friends.
There's a lot of them around our circles recently.
And I've read, you know, Tom Merritt wrote a really interesting twist on a sci-fi idea. I don't want to spoil. He had to explain to me what it was a twist on. Like, oh, no, I took it from this. And I went, oh, I didn't see it when I read it. It was so covered up. But it was really good. And then there's been other stuff I've read by people who are like, oh, this should be a no-brainer. And I'm like, wow, this is hard to read. Difficult. Plotting. I'm never finishing this. You know, I couldn't put Den of Thieves down. Surprise, Bill Meek is a great storyteller and a really above and beyond competent writer. You're doing yourself a disservice if you're not checking out this book in this series. There's some really great talent just hitting there, waiting. You watch in a couple of years, man, people are going to catch on. They're going to, you know, come to the party a little later on. And they're going to be like, holy shit, where has this been? Like, seriously, I'm expecting Hollywood to come knocking, man.
You know, my one goal as I was finishing it up. I was hoping, and you have to tell me if I hit this.
Okay.
I wanted people who enjoyed those Hardy Boys, like, yep, kind of. I wanted them to, because, you know, I actually, in research for this and for the future ones, I've been reading a lot of Hardy Boys the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, you go back to it, and it's not like you remember. It's really stilted, and the writing's bad, and the plot's weird, and people do really irrational things, which is part of its charm. But what I was trying to do with this was to write the Hardy Boys book that you remember reading, not the one you actually read. I'm hoping I hit that.
You totally hit that. Now, I'll be honest. I have not attempted to sit down and try to, you know, reread a Hardy Boys book or an Encyclopedia Brown.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. And no, I'm sure, you know, they're written for a young age group. They're written for an age group that's not necessarily prepared for bigger ideas. And it let's face it, there are how many Hardy Boy books out there?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, Hardy Boys, you know, it says Franklin W. Dixon on the cover, but there wasn't a Franklin W. Dixon. There was a guy who wrote a lot of them, especially the original ones. But it was
these were all ghost written by other. It's like the Bond books at this point. Ian Fleming's long dead, but people are writing under the Ian Fleming name. Yeah.
Yeah. The editors would send out a plot to a writer in Poughkeepsie, and you know, you have a week, and we'll give you a grand if you finish it. I give us 40,000 words.
It was pulp writing for kids, really, in a lot of ways. It was just like a writing mill. Like, seriously, we need words on the page. Words on the page. We got to keep cranking it out. We're printing
that's
money.
That's how all those kids' stories were put out. Well, Encyclopedia Brown, I think, was pretty legit. I think Donald.
No, I agree. To be fair, yes. Encyclopedia Brown definitely was creator-owned, written all the way through. And
Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, Bobbsey Twins, Sweet Valley High, Twins, Kids. All of that, you know,
Goosebumps, all of them, you know, and I mean, that all those young adult books in their way. Yes, I would agree. It definitely struck me as, oh man, I kind of remember, because it's interesting, because I remember when I really, for the first time, dug into going to the library all the time. And this is back when I was living in Hawaii. And it would be during, and I don't remember what year it was, but it was during a summer vacation. And they were about, we lived right along the Alawai Boulevard. And it's funny, I should pull up a Google Maps. I could show it to you right now. I've done it before. But at the end of the Alawai was the public library for Waikiki. And I used to walk down there and all the time. And, you know, it was cool because you was there so much, the librarians would recognize you. Oh, it's little Holly Boy. He's always picking up books. Look at that. Yeah, and I remember reading a lot of the Encyclopedia Browns, and I devoured them. And then never thought about them again. It was a little weird, you know. But this book reminded me of that library. Like, I could see, I don't know why, but while I was reading this book, I felt a little bit like I was having sort of a flashback to when I was that age at that library reading those kinds of books. So I think succeeded.
I was the same way. I lived in the stacks. You know, I would get the maximum amount of books that the library would allow me to get, which was 25.
Yeah.
And I'd bring them back within 3 or 4 days to get a whole nother stack of Hardy Boys.
Remember when they used to, did they do this thing where you could read books over the summer to help fight multiple sclerosis?
There was
some sort of book program.
Some sort of book thing I did to try and win like a bike from the Fox station in Pittsburgh, like Fox Kids in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, in Hawaii, they did something for like MS, and it was like if you did this, I don't even remember what they gave you. They gave you like gift certificates to somewhere or something. But I was a voracious reader, and I remember bringing in my lists, pages.
Yeah.
And they didn't believe I read all the books.
I had similar stuff happen, because they were like, how did you read 100 books in a week? Because I homeschooled and I don't do anything else except sit in my room and read.
Yeah, no,
if I'm not down there watching Power Rangers, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It really is. This is an outstanding novel. You're clearly, it's got a lot more going on to it than just, oh, look, it's a cute superhero book. There's more depth to it. Clearly, we're just kind of, this is the tip of the iceberg, and I'm really intrigued to see how deep the iceberg goes. You've done a fantastic job with this, Bill. No bullshit aside, folks. Yes, I know Bill, but I wouldn't have gone through the trouble on my own time to get sit him down tonight to record this video, to share it with you guys, if I genuinely didn't think it was worth it. Is there anything else you would like to tell folks that might be, you know, this might be new to, and they hung out and they're like, well, okay, I'm going to check that out. Anything you want to let them know? And
I'm very embarrassed right now, Adam, just very, very much embarrassed.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
You're too kind, Adam.
No. It's sincere. It's well earned. Seriously. So enjoy it.
But basically, you know, we have the two books, physical and ebook editions, dogboyadventures.com. You can pick them up. The new one, Danger on Liberty Pier, is available at bit.ly/LibertyPier, or like I said, you can get them at dogboyadventures.com.
Also Amazon, available on Kindle.
Yes, you know, that can definitely help the stats. And, you know, something that's very important that not a lot of people think, they're like, I'll get around to it. Reviews are very important for stuff like this, because, you know, people just browsing around, oh, kid superhero. Oh, there is a one that has 10 reviews, and there's one that has 3 reviews. The one that has 10 reviews only has 4 stars, but the one that has 3 reviews has 5 stars. I'm going to go with the one with 10, because that seems better, right?
Yeah, there's more people tried. That must be something they know. I don't.
Yeah, but I mean, honest reviews are the author's biggest friends. So, you know, if you want to help, you know, definitely go to Amazon and leave reviews, because that helps bring new people in.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you can check out my, I will just mention, I have a Once Upon a Time, the show on ABC. I have a Once Upon a Time podcast I do with Anne-Marie Desimone that we do every Monday when the show's on at greetingsfromstorybrooke.com too.
Excellent. Well, Bill, again, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and talk with me a little bit. I am sorry. I had hoped maybe I was going to be able to read the novella before we talked, but you know, just the way things go. So
I hate you now.
As well you should. you've done good, Mr. Bill. You done good. I highly recommend it for folks out there. So check it out. Dog Boy, Den of Thieves is where you can get started. What are you doing? No.
No auto rotate.
No auto rotate. There. Read it. Check it out. Bill, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. To those of you watching, like the video, subscribe, share, and then go read his book, because it's awfully good, okay?
Dog Boy, Den of Thieves, by Bill Meeks. Available now on the Amazon Kindle, iBooks, at CreateSpace, or for the Barnes & Noble Nook. And find out more at dogboyadventures.com.